Welcome to the Beyond the Box Score podcast. In this episode, I interview Coach Miles Lester. He's a graduate assistant at the University of Houston. Coach, how's it going?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Coach, you want to give yourself a brief introduction to the listeners?
My name is Miles Lester. Just finished up my first year with the University of Houston program. I played for 4 years at Wake Forest as a walk-on. Received a scholarship my last year. Played for Coach Steve Forbes there and Coach Danny Manning. Before that, spent 1 year at Rice playing for Scott Pear my freshman season. And then also went to prep school out in the Northeast at Wilburn Munson Academy playing for Mike Mannix, who now hosts a big podcast that he interviews coaches on every week. So he's a good follow for anyone out there and a good guy in the coaching community.
Awesome. Now, you were born in Kansas. What do you remember about growing up there?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is just how big basketball is there. You know, we went to Wichita State this year, and that was my first time being back there since I moved from Wichita, which was my freshman year, in terms of like going to a game. And I just remember growing up, like, that was the thing to do. Like, my friends and I would all go to the Wichita State basketball game, go with my family, go with my grandma. You know, we always had season tickets. That place was always sold out. So you have that, you know, going on in Wichita growing up. Then you got Kansas basketball, which is, you know, the biggest thing in the world if you live in Kansas and grow up there. You know, there's 16,000 people sold out every single game, no matter if it's an exhibition game or what it is. So just growing up around that. And there's really highlight, like, Wichita and Kansas City has some really good players. Like, when I was growing up, Connor Frankamp, who ended up going to Kansas and Wichita State and being a good player there, like, he was the big name. You know, that's who I idolized as a middle school or high school. So there's a lot of good players in that area. There's a lot of good basketball. Even Kansas State's always got a good team. So just growing up, I mean, it's a great basketball state. The fans love it. There's a lot of good players. So it was a good, I mean, that's kind of what grew my love for basketball, just always being around it, you know, seeing it at the highest level in terms of the college game.
I know you grew up in Mass. Talk about growing up in the Northeast and really how you got introduced to the game of basketball.
So I went out there my junior year of high school, spent 2 years there for prep school. So that was kind of, I mean, that was like being in college without being in college. You know, my parents were still in Kansas. So I was living in a dorm with a roommate from Russia. Actually, he spoke barely any English. I had to help him out with his homework and stuff, but that's where I really, like, kind of learned the game of basketball. Like, I was always a fan, and, you know, I was a pretty good player, but going to a prep school and playing for Coach Mannix, like, we did a lot of stuff that our offense was a college type offense. You know, we had a lot of different pick and roll coverages that we would do depending on the opponent, which you're not really, a lot of times you're not doing that in high school. So that's really where I kind of grew my basketball IQ in terms of being able to understand the game and understand at the level that's required of a college basketball player. And so it was really good for that. And the NEPSAC, I mean, I think it's the best league in the country. You know, every team you play has multiple Division I guys. Some of, like, we played Brewster that year. I think they had guys on their bench that were going high major that weren't even playing. Like, they had some really good guys. And there's a lot of good players up there. I mean, we had, our team wasn't even that good. And we had Winnie and Gabriel, who, you know, is playing for the Lakers now. And we went under 500. And we had another D1 guy, and then myself, and then a couple D2, D3 guys. So, like, that's how good the competition is up there. So it's really, it was a really good experience. And you know, it taught me to grow up a ton because I was on my own out there.
Now, you put up pretty good numbers yourself. Talk about the high school and AAU coaches you played for, what you learned from them in particular.
Yeah, I mean, from Coach Mannix, like I said, like, he really helped me with learning basketball IQ. Also really helped me with just teaching discipline. He was also our dorm parent at the school. And so I would say, you know, I was pretty messy. I like to drink a lot of soda, would eat pretty bad. You know, I'd play ping pong in my free time, and he helped me get focused just, you know, on basketball a lot more, and just, like, being organized and just growing up overall. Like, I was, you know, 16, 17, and he made me kind of transition from being and especially earlier, like, most people, they make that transition in college, and that's why a lot of freshmen struggle. But But I was able to make that transition in high school, and that was kind of a testament to Coach Mannix, because he helped with a lot of that. So he was really good. And then played with probably a lot. I played with a lot of AAU teams over my career, just because I was moving around a lot. And that's kind of the trend that, you know, has ended up happening. If you're not playing a lot, like, you go to a new AAU team. I wish I didn't play for as many. Looking back, I wish I would have stuck with, you know, one or two. But I played with MoCan for a little bit. And I mean, I think they're the best program in the country. Like, Luke Barnwell's who I played for, who's the Sunrise head coach. I think he, if I was a Division I head coach right now, I'd make him my associate coach. He knows the game of basketball at a really high level. I mean, this was when I was in 15U. I can remember we had a huge playbook, and, you know, for 15U AU, and that's just rare. And we were running, you know, some Wichita State sets that Greg Marshall ran that were really high level. So he was a really good coach. Got to learn from him. And then I also played for the KC Pumas, which is now the Pacers. I think they actually changed their name again, but that's who Landry Shamet played for them. And so that was, I was always a really good passer. I was never that good of a shooter. And then playing for Darren Mason, I think he's the best shooting coach in the country. That's kind of what his thing is he really helps develop guys as shooters. Like, again, if I was a head coach, I'd hire him as my player development guy. He's an incredible shooting coach. I mean, I'm sure I've heard Landry talk about it before. Like, he played for him. He never left. He played for him from middle school until, you know, he went to college. Like, he still trains with him in the summer. He is the best of the best in terms of developing shooting side. That was really helpful. So playing for those two teams when I was in Kansas, like, that really helped in terms of just learning the game as well. And then developing my shooting. So I learned a lot from those two programs.
Awesome. What was your recruitment like, and what played into your decision to be a student athlete at Rice?
Yeah, I mean, it was going pretty well. I went to a bunch of camps my summer going into my senior year, was getting some Ivy and Patriot League interest. And then I remember July, which obviously was like the big recruiting period, started out playing pretty well the first weekend, and then hurt my ankle. Ended up playing like one or two more games with that, and just was pretty bad. I think we lost both those games. We ended up playing on like an aux cord, and there was zero coaches there. And I was horrible that whole week. And so my ankle was in bad shape, so I shut it down. So then going into that fall, you know, a lot of those higher academic schools, they got to try and get kids early. None of them were able to see me in July. So that kind of ended up hurting my recruiting from that standpoint. So I started, you know, talking to a lot of D3 schools, and then as the season went on, you know, I put up pretty good numbers. So they were pretty interested in me. Like, I visited Williams, Amherst, Tufts, Wesleyan. So, you know, four of the best in terms of academic schools in the country. And they're really good basketball schools too. Like, I played pickle with them, and looking back, like, they're just as good as a lot of, you know, low major D1 teams. Like, they have some really good players. So that's kind of what I was planning on doing and then Babson was the other one. I was planning on going to one of those schools. Rice came to watch one of our kids work out, and it was a 6 a.m. workout. And I guess I had a pretty good workout, because I think they asked about me if I'd be interested in a preferred walk-on position. And so that was when Coach Rhodes was there. And JD Byers was the one that I talked to, is at VC with him now. And so then I ended up coming on a visit at Rice, and I think it was on my flight back is when Coach Rhodes took the VCU job. So I planned on going in there as a preferred walk-on. Then that happened. That kind of, you know, made me delay a little bit. But then Coach Perry got the job, and so he still continued to want me there as a walk-on. And then they started having some transfers out, which led to me getting a scholarship, and then led to me, you know, end up getting some playing time as a freshman. So it was a good experience for sure.
And don't sell yourself short, and not just playing time, but you got 5 starts, played in 29 games. What was that experience like? And do you have any Chris Kreider stories?
Kreider's my guy. He's at SMU now, so I got to see him this year, actually. But no, it was it was a great experience. Like, I started against Texas Tech that year. That was my second start, and obviously they had some really good players. So, like, going up against them was great. Started in New Mexico. I think I had 13 in the first half there. And to this day, I'll never forget. So the altitude there is insane. I remember as soon as halftime hit, that was the most minutes I had played in college. I just ran to the locker room and started puking like crazy. Like I was on my deathbed. The altitude, like it's no joke. You think it's a joke, and then they have this tunnel and you got to run so high up. It's like half a mile. So that and the altitude and then me playing a lot, like that one got to me. But there was, Conference USA is a really good league. A lot of people, obviously they're showing out right now with FAU and North Texas and UAB doing really well, but it's a really good league. I mean, you're playing, and there's a lot of JUCO recruits. So you're playing a lot of grown men, and I'm coming in as a pretty skinny guy, not that tall, not that athletic. So you got to learn, kind of on your feet. But it was, I mean, it was great. Like, I think it helped me develop a lot in terms of understanding the game too, because as a point guard, especially as a freshman point guard, you got to know not only every play for yourself, but where everyone's going to be at, especially at the college level. So that helped me grow a ton. And Coach Kreider's my guy. I can't think of any great stories, but he's a good dude. He would do class checks, so I always enjoyed getting to see him there. And I'm glad he's at SMU, because I really like what they got going on over there. They obviously didn't have a great season wins and losses wise, but we scouted them. I think they run some good stuff. So once they get, some talent in there, since they're new, like I think they'll do pretty well.
No doubt. In the pre-transfer portal era, you mentioned you transferred from Rice, ended up as a preferred walk-on at Wake Forest under Danny Manning. What made you decide to transfer, and what made you feel that Wake Forest was the right choice for you?
I ended up transferring for a few reasons. One, I had always been told I wouldn't, when I went to prep school, everyone said I wouldn't be able to get, play a lot there. Ended up playing there. Then everyone said I'd have to go D3, ended up playing at D1. So like I always thought, I'd been able to prove people wrong. So I wanted to play, every kid wants to play high major basketball. So that was my dream, and I thought, I could go up and do the same thing I had been doing my whole life, which is work hard enough to just earn yourself a spot in the rotation. Obviously ended up never playing, but I would do the same decision again if I had to. I really enjoyed my experience at Wake. And my reason for going there, so I really wanted to go to Texas, but I had talked to them a few times, ended up not working out. And then Steve Woodbury, my guy, Wichita guy, I had talked to him a little bit. We started talking a lot on the phone, and really liked him, talked to Coach Manning on the phone. So I went out for a visit, and I really wanted to go to business school. That was one thing Rice didn't have. Just kind of funny now because I'm not even in the business world, but so I wanted to do like investment banking or consulting after I graduated. So I wanted to go to a school that had a business school and not, have to study econ, which is what I would have done at Rice. That was another, that's when I actually decided I wanted to go there, is I went to a class in Faro Hall, which is the business school at Wake. I was just blown away by, one, the class, like two, the building and all that. So that's actually like in my mind when I decided to commit, was after going to class, which there's probably not a lot of basketball players that will say they committed because they went to a class, but that was a big selling point. And then, growing up in Kansas, Danny Manning's like the most popular, most famous man if you're a Kansas fan. So just being able to play for him and learn from him, and then obviously on the staff, you had a lot of Kansas legends too. So it was, and they're all from Kansas, which helped, especially when you're going to a school, that far away from home. Being able to be around people that are from the same area that you're from was helpful too.
Yeah, I can honestly say that's a first of deciding to go to a school after going to class. That I don't think I've ever heard a basketball player say that.
Yeah, it was a cool class. Shout out to Kenny Herbst. He was a walk-on with Randolph and Tim Duncan, and now I think he's the dean of the business school now, or the undergrad. He was a marketing professor. I actually had him for marketing class. He's the man. He was always front row at every game, so he's the man.
Love it. Yeah, 2018, 2019 season at Wake Forest didn't go as well as the Deacs had hoped. And the team had lots of young talent and what I think was a really good coaching staff. Looking back on it now as a coach, is there anything that the staff could have done, or do you think it was just going to be a season with growing pains that would pay off the next year?
Yeah, I mean, looking back, like one of the things I've experienced from just being around college, I think, you know, the teams that win are the teams that get old together. No matter how much young talent you win, I mean, we see it. When was the last time? I guess Duke made the Final Four last year, but they had some older guys. Like, you know, the Kentuckys of the world, the Dukes of the world. Like, Kansas last year won it because they finally had guys that stayed old together. Like, that's why we see a Final Four this year where it's a lot of teams that no one expected to be there. So we had a lot of young guys, and we had talented guys, but at the same time, they had never played together before. A lot of them hadn't, you know, played a lot of minutes at the high major level. And so I think that was, you know, I think that's a big reason why you struggle, because the more time you spend around, you know, a team, the more you understand their tendencies, the more, you know, you understand where a guy likes the ball, the more you understand, you know, how a guy plays defensively or just overall defensive scheme. Like, as a freshman or sophomore, you don't understand that kind of thing. If you do, then you're five steps ahead of everyone. But as a junior and senior, like, even at Houston, you know, the guys that talk the most in practice are older guys and the guys that have been there for a while. And so I think just having, you know, a younger team, that's probably what made it difficult that year.
What was the adjustment like going from scholarship player Rice to being a walk-on at Wake, especially because if memory serves me correct, you did have to sit out as a redshirt.
Yeah, I did. I mean, it's tough. Like, again, the conversations I had with my parents when I decided to go to Wake as a walk-on was I had to accept that there was a chance that I would never play, you know, a meaningful minute of basketball again. Because that's what, if you're a walk-on and you come in and you're like, oh, I got to play. You're going to be, you know, a cancer for the program. You're going to be a terrible teammate to be around. So that was, I mean, I kind of had that mindset going in is, you know, I want to play. I'm going to try to play. But at the same time, if I don't ever play, like, that's my choice that I made. And so that helped a lot. But it's definitely, you know, you go from being the one that is doing the scouts in terms of like you're guarding the scout team to now you're the one on scout team shooting all the shots. You go from, you know, watching film and you're trying to study and analyze every single thing going on because you're going to be out in the game, to now, you know, yeah, you can watch film if you want, but it doesn't really matter because you're not going to be playing. So it's a lot different. Especially, and then like people care about walk-ons, but like they don't care the same amount as they care about, you know, guys that are playing overall. So it was a tough adjustment. At the same time, like, my mindset was always, again, like, if I never played another meaningful minute at Wake, would I be happy? And there was plenty of things that kept me happy there. So again, like, I would make the same decision if I knew what I knew now. And, you know, there was a lot of value that came out of going there. But I mean, I think your mindset as a walk-on has to be getting, you know, the position that you're going against every day, getting them better. So did I make our point guards and shooting guards better? Getting the team better in terms of scout, because you're going to be the scout team guys. So can you make those guys better? And just, you know, can you bring energy? Can you be enthusiastic? Can you be, you know, high-fiving teammates, talking all the time? Like, you know, coaches are going to yell and sometimes players will yell. So you need a few guys on a team that are going to kind of lighten the mood up. So I would try and be one of those guys that would always be, you know, high-fiving people, laughing, smiling. Like, it's practically, I mean, it's a grind. You're practicing 200 plus times a year and for only, you know, 30 games max. So you got to have some guys in there that are trying to lighten the mood every once in a while. So I would just try and focus on those things every day.
Anthony Billis, son Jay Billis, was another walk-on at Wake. Yeah. Did you have many interactions with Jay Billis? And what was Anthony like as a teammate and fellow walk-on?
Yeah, so Billis was there only for 1 year while I was there, my first year, when I was sitting down. He really knew basketball. He was kind of like a walk-on mentor for me. While I do say, like, I thought those things, there was definitely times where, you know, I would be in a bad mood because I couldn't play at all that year. And there was times I thought I could help the team out since we were a younger team. And so he was always good at, you know, keeping the walk-ons level-headed. And he was always good at challenging, you know, the scholarship guys too, which I ended up, you know, doing more as I got older. And I kind of learned from him, like, you know, you can't be yelling at them or rude about it because then you got to approach it the right way. And so I kind of took a lot from that because he was a really good, I'm pretty sure he was a captain that year. He was a really good leader. You know, he knew how to challenge guys that they were getting the minutes when they needed to be. So he was really good. You know, he was a good leader for the walk-ons, for the scout team, and he was a good leader for our scholarship guys that were playing too. And then I actually never met Jay Billis there. I met him this year. He was doing he did our Alabama game, and I didn't get a chance to say anything to him. And then he did our Virginia game right after. So I went up, introduced myself before that, said I played with his son. So we got to talk for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, and he's, you know, growing up in basketball, obviously he's a lot of people's idols. He's a big name. So it's pretty cool to talk to him.
Awesome. Yeah, that 1920 team improved the ACC record by 2 games. How tough was it for you and the rest of the players to tune out the noise as far as people, you know, criticizing the coach and the hateful things that were, you know, going around on social media?
Yeah, it was tough. There was obviously there was a lot. I mean, we thought there was like fake news going around the summer before that, you know, Coach Manning was going to be let go. Like there was a day me and Blake were playing at, I think we were playing at the rec, and like we thought he got let go because I think Jeff Goodman or someone tweeted something out about him potentially being let go. So that was, you know, we had to experience that for pretty much a whole year. And it's tough, you know, athletes are humans too. Like it's tough to, we go on Twitter, like we go on Instagram, we see comments after a game, like you try not to, but at the same time, you know, we're humans, we check our phones, so we see a lot of that stuff. So it was, I think it was tough for everyone, and then especially once COVID hit, because we were kind of all at home and we didn't know, you know, what was going to happen, because we saw the rumors coming around all the time. And then remember I woke up, it was like 8 o'clock, and I think it was JB texted us that we had a emergency Zoom meeting, and that's when, and then I think Jeff Goodman or someone leaked it out like right when we were joining that. So that's kind of when we found out. But I mean, overall, I think just as a team, like it's tough. I wouldn't say it's a you versus us mentality in terms of like us versus the fan base. You know, I always got along really well with, you know, the Wake fans, the Wake student body. But at the same time, like knowing that they were like, they were probably mad that we beat UNC because they thought that might keep them another year, like knowing and seeing those kinds of things, like those comments, it's pretty tough to handle as, you know, someone that's actually playing on the team and around those guys, that around the coaching staff every day. So I mean, that was definitely a tough year, because no matter if we won or lost, you're gonna have to deal with some stuff from the fan base.
Ultimately, Wake Forest went in a different direction and fired Coach Manning, hired Steve Forbes. What goes through your mind when you found out that Coach Manning wasn't going to be your coach during that Zoom meeting? And what did you think of the hire initially of Coach Forbes?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of, you know, we had been seeing the rumors all year. So I wouldn't say we knew it was going to happen, but, you know, just based on like seeing all that stuff all the time, like I wasn't shocked by it. I mean, I felt bad. I mean, I obviously felt bad for Coach Manning, but I felt horrible for his wife and horrible for the support staff and all those people, because, you know, it's COVID. Those like support staff jobs aren't paying a lot of money. I don't know if people know that or not, but, you know, they're losing their job during COVID. You know, Ryan Horn, who's one of the best strength coaches in the country, Molly, who's incredible at the job she was doing, you know, Evan, coach's son, was our video coordinator. So like, I felt really bad for all those people. Felt really bad for Mrs. Manning, because she's a sweetheart. And then, I mean, I obviously felt bad for Coach. I really liked playing for him and really liked being around him every day. He's a great person. Anyone that's, you know, been around him and been around those assistants know that they know basketball, that they're really good people. So I like that staff a lot. I mean, I still talk to Coach Chill. We have a group chat with Blake, Coach Chill and I, and I still talk to Coach Woodbury, same thing. We have a group chat. Like, I still talk to those guys. Coach Walters was really helpful last year when I was looking for a job. You know, he reached out to some people for me, and we talked on the phone. So they had a really good staff, good people. So it was tough when that happened. But when we hired Coach Forbes, you know, the first thing I noticed about him was just how much he's won at every level he's been at. And then, you know, he had been at Wichita State, so I'd asked some people that had been around the program, and they all spoke very highly of him. Again, like he had won everywhere he had been at. You know, our first meeting, again, everything was on Zoom. Our first Zoom meeting with him, you know, he said said he was coming here to win games and raise banners, and that was the first thing he said to us. And so, you know, you kind of believe him. And obviously, I don't think we made that happen while I was there, but I think soon that will happen. And so, you know, he knows how to win. He's always been around winning, whether he's an assistant or a head coach. He's a really, I mean, I love Coach Forbes. He's a good coach, good person. So, I mean, I was excited when I found out about him coming there because I knew that he could win. And, you know, that's what I really wanted to do my last couple years there.
As a redshirt senior, you appeared in 7 games off the bench. Like you mentioned, put on scholarship your final semester in Winston-Salem. What was it like As a redshirt senior, you appeared in 7 games off the bench. And like you mentioned, you got put on scholarship for your final semester in Winston-Salem. What was it like to go from having a sub-500 record to winning 25 games and playing in the NIT quarterfinals?
Yeah, I mean, it was about the biggest change you can imagine. It was, you know, practices were a lot more enjoyable when you're winning a lot of games. You know, you can withstand that kind of grind a little bit better. It made for every day, you know, being a lot more enjoyable. And then obviously winning games, like, that's just something that when you experience it, it teaches you a lot about what it takes to win. And so I think that was kind of the biggest thing I took away from that year is, you know, what did we do in terms of practice that translated to games that I thought helped us win? So I got to learn a lot from that experience. And then, you know, that was my first year or our first year winning while I was at Wake. So seeing kind of that fan base come back alive, you know, we had a huge student section for like 4 or 5 of our conference games. Like we walked out at the 47-minute warm-up and, you know, student section was filled to the brim and you couldn't even hear. And like seeing that energy in the Joel again was awesome. I think they rushed the court after we beat UNC, or at least some people did. Like getting to experience that was great. I actually had some friends from Wichita up there for that game and I got in the game, missed a shot, but like getting to experience that with them. And then, I mean, just, you know, around campus, people actually like recognize you because they were going to games and they knew about the team. And so, and then people in the city would recognize you. And like, you know, you kind of felt like a high major Division I basketball player for the first time, which is crazy to say, but you know, the fan base had kind of lost interest, but, and they're still, I mean, even this year, they weren't getting a ton of fan support, but they've, you know, made big strides there. And so that was, you know, that was pretty cool just being around winning and all the things that came with it in terms of what you can learn from it, but then also, you know, getting to enjoy it with your teammates, with the coaches.
Awesome. Coach Forbes had you and the other walk-ons on the podium for a post-game press conference. What do you remember about that experience and how nervous were you to be interviewed?
Yeah, that was pretty cool that he did that. I still appreciate that he did that. You know, that's even at most programs, you never see that happening, no matter, you know, how much walk-ons contribute and they contribute. So that was a pretty unique one. And I think he was, you know, pleased with what we did on the scout team. I think that was for the VMI game. They run a lot of Princeton action. I think we ran it pretty well that week. And they ended up getting out of it and running some other stuff because we defended it so well, which was because we hadn't defended it well in practice. And we had to do it a lot. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't that nervous. I had done some interviews at Rice and I mean, I wasn't that nervous, but I think I only got asked, I think coach talked the whole time. And then I got like one answer in there, something like that.
That's awesome. Yeah. I recall that you did some basketball analytic data. What made you interested in that aspect of basketball?
Yeah, I spent some time with, I still work for Shot Quality a little bit, and then I do some analytics stuff for Houston. I mean, I've always found it interesting because I think I've always enjoyed psychology. And so I think we all have biases that are inherent in our brains. I think we all have, you know, we use stuff to try and help our opinion instead of looking at stuff for fact. And so I think, you know, numbers never lie. You can twist numbers to make it fit any argument you want, make it fit any story you want. But I think you can just get a lot out of analytics in terms of in the game of basketball. if you're able to look at it holistically, if you're able to, you know, analyze why it matters or why it doesn't matter. Like, you know, if a team's not a great mid-range shooting team, well, maybe it's because, you know, they don't emphasize shooting mid-rangers. Like, there's a lot of stuff you can get from it. I think there's also a lot of stuff that, you know, is kind of used as, like people don't understand the full picture of it. And they don't understand, you know, I guess going back to my mid-range example, like a team will, you know, say, why don't they shoot a lot of mid-rangers, or if they're efficient at it, like sometimes they'll be efficient, they don't shoot a lot. Well, because that's not, you know, the scheme they're set up or designed to. So, I mean, I enjoy the analytical side though, just again, because, you know, numbers don't lie. You may be able to manipulate it to kind of lie or deceive a little bit, but if you're able to use it in the right way, like it can provide a lot of value, because it's taking out, you know, your biases, your opinion. It's just factual information.
You graduated from Wake Forest in 2022. What opportunities did you have as far as a graduate transfer, a graduate assistant, or just coaching?
I got hit up by a couple people for transferring, but I had played 5 years. My back is still hurt from my freshman year at Rice, and my body just kind of gave up on me, so I didn't really want to go through that grind for another year. And so I knew I hadn't decided yet if I wanted to go into the business world or the coaching world. That's kind of still why I was doing shot quality, is I enjoyed the startup stuff and it was basketball. And so, you know, I reached out to schools. There wasn't a ton of GA stuff out there. Did interview for a couple positions, and then I actually really wanted to work in the NBA that summer. So I went out to Vegas, worked as a volunteer for the Celtics, you know, used my graduation money to pay for that trip. That was a really good experience. So that helped me build some NBA connections, and I almost got a couple of jobs there. Got the interviews, got down to like the final couple candidates, but again, neither of those came to fruition. And so that's kind of what led me to the University of Houston.
What was your connection with Houston, and how did you get connected with Coach Sampson? And then lastly, what was your first week with the Cougars like?
So I didn't know anyone there. It was kind of just emailing. It was around August at that point, and GA jobs were limited. I was talking to, you know, one school, but then I had an MBA opportunity come up. And so I kind of had to turn down the GA opportunity, because I was in like the final two candidates, and they were going to need another couple weeks to decide. And so when that didn't happen, I had reached out to some schools around that time, and the video coordinator at Houston responded and said that, you know, they had a volunteer position. They needed, you know, someone that could help out with video, help out with, you know, being on the court and all that stuff. So that's kind of what, when I didn't get the NBA position, that's what led me to Houston. So like, I mean, I wasn't on staff or anything this year. I was obviously around a lot, but I mean, I went into grad school and I got there so I could be on the court, you know, paid for that and everything. And then my first week, I mean, I think I was kind of struck by just how much those guys work out. They do. And then also the energy always around it, like, they work out all the time. That's a huge part of the culture, is player development. Guys are always in the gym, you know, they go really hard. They're not, you know, some workouts guys come in, they just shoot a bunch of threes and that's it. Like, this is August, and, you know, they're in their individual workouts, they're working on pick and roll defense. They're working on, you know, our defensive rotations, our defensive assignments. And this is an individual workouts. Plus, you know, they're still shooting, doing ball handling and all that. So that kind of hit me that first week, is just all the stuff that they do in their workouts, and then just the intensity, the energy, from the managers to, you know, everyone that's on the court. Everyone's clapping the whole time. Everyone's talking. Everyone's bringing energy in the program. So that was kind of what stuck out to me when I first got here.
You know, graduate assistants have different roles at different programs and levels. What have you had as far as responsibilities this season, and talk about some areas that you've grown as a basketball coach?
I mean, a lot of the time is player development, guarding our fours and fives. A lot of the time is doing edits for the coaches, doing vi other video stuff, for Coach Sampson or for anyone on the coaching staff that wants to look at something, helping out with scouts. So a lot of the time is, when you're helping out with scouts or when you're doing video stuff, a lot of that is looking at schemes, X's and O's. So I think that's probably what I've learned the most this year is just how many, every team runs something different in terms of their offense or defensive philosophy. So that's something I always enjoy looking at when I'm looking at video stuff is, why does this coach run this? How does it fit their personnel? How do they change it up, based on the defense they're playing? Like what kind of plays are they going to run if they're playing a trapping defense versus a pack line defense versus a no middle defense? Like if I'm watching a game, like that's the stuff that I'm looking for. And I had never really thought about it that way before I got here. And so I think that's been helpful for, my coaching development is when you're thinking about being an assistant or a head coach, like that's going to be whether you're on the offense or defensive side of the ball, like understanding how to change based on who you're playing and based on how they play. I think that's going to be something that's important. And then I think also seeing, the relationships that the coaches here build with the players and, how important that is to them and, how they go about doing that and how invested they are in doing that. Like it's kind of taught me about how much relationships really do matter. And, as a player, you understand all that, but seeing all the time that these guys put in, everyone on the staff into the players and how much, their time and energy they're pouring into these guys. Like it's taught me a lot about, the importance of relationships, and just how much work goes into becoming a successful program.
That's well said. Houston was ranked number one in the country for the first time since Phi Slamma Jam. How special was it to be a part of an elite program in the country? And what's it like being the hunted as opposed to being the hunter?
Yeah, I mean it's an incredible thing. I've never won three games before. We used to just be excited if we won a game. Now, if you're not winning by 15, 20, a lot of times you're mad because you're doing something wrong during the game. So it's just the game's hoping to win, you're expecting to win, and you're mad if you're not winning by if you're not blowing teams out, because a lot of times you're expected to blow teams out. So it's just a different expectation level. So I mean, in terms of the hunter being versus the hunted, I think a big thing that comes into that is complacency. You can't get complacent. You can't let the players get complacent. I think that's one of the things that Coach Sampson does really well and the staff does really well is every game, they kind of come up with the unique set of challenges, like why this team could beat us. What they do well that if we don't do this, like they're gonna come out and they're gonna blow us out. Like they do a good job. Coach does a really good job of kind of creating a chip on our shoulder for every game. So learned a lot in terms from him and on how to motivate, how to keep guys interested in every game, because it's a grind of a season when you're winning a lot of games, like influence the day-to-day that goes on. But our staff does and our players do a really good job of being focused on, the habits, the daily, kind of grind of practice, study hall, getting workouts in, and that kind of being, more of a win every day thing than just, oh, we're going to go into a game and we're Houston, so we should, beat this team. Like we really focus on just every day being a process, practice being, the most important thing that day and the next game being the most important thing.
Talk about some of the coaches and support staff members at Houston and things that you've learned on and off the court from them.
Coach Kellen, he's one of the assistants. Coach, that's Coach Sampson's son. He's about as good as it gets. Whether it's Houston or whoever else ends up hiring that man, they're gonna get a lot of winning coming to their program soon. So I've learned a ton from him. That's I spent a lot of time around him since he worked out of our fours, and I'm around them. So I think. He's really good about, I think all our coaches are good about feeling out kind of Coach Sampson's mood and then adjusting with his individuals based on how he expects Coach Sampson to be during practice. So if, you know, he thinks coach is going to be, you know, mad about something, like he'll be a little more lighthearted, kind of joke around with the four, especially if he knows they're going to be the ones, you know, taking the brunt of some of the yelling. So he's just really good. He's really personable. He's really good at building relationships with players. You know, that's a reason. I mean, we've only, I think that Houston in the years of the transfer portal, I've only had one guy transfer out that, you know, was playing significant minutes or was playing any minutes. And in the transfer portal age, like you just don't see that. And that's because all the staff's really good at that. Coach Q, Quanis White, same thing. He's, you know, he should be a head coach. And whenever someone hires him as a head coach, he's going to do a great job. He works with our guards, as you can see, every year. You know, Houston has really good guards. He develops them really well. He's got some really good workouts, and he teaches a lot on the defensive side of the ball and those individuals. And, you know, I've learned more about that side of the ball and just all the stuff that goes into the little things that go into being a really good defensive team. I've learned a lot of that just from watching his workouts, especially in the summer and the fall when, you know, he was teaching those guys. And, you know, I've seen him every day. He kind of always brings it every day. And I mean, I know that, you know, may have a bad day or may just not. Like he brings every day. He's going to make sure everyone that works out with him, every manager that's with him, everyone that's around him is going to be on the same level that he is. So he's really good at just bringing everyone that's involved their level to meet his, and his level is always going to be very high level. Coach HP, Hollis Price, he played for Coach Sampson. Again, another really smart guy. He works with our fives a lot, and he, you know, he's really good at developing them. He knows the game. He's a really good guy too. He's kind of more of the like trying to pump the team up when stuff's going wrong. Like he's always kind of the level-headed guy that, you know, knows how to interact with the guys, knows how to keep them. You know, if we're down, I remember the Auburn game, like we were down and he came into the locker room, was getting everyone, you know, ready to go, staying positive. So he's really good about that kind of stuff too. Very personable guy, great recruiter. We actually went bowling today, so that's my guy. That's who I helped him out with scouts. So we have a good relationship. He's an awesome person. So, I mean, someday, I don't know when it'll be, but also same thing. I think he'll be a really good head coach. Coach Casey is our special assistant. You know, he's big time brains trust behind the operation. Does a lot of the scouting, does a lot of the X's and O's, a lot of the analytical work. Really smart guy. Works really hard. He's always, you know, first one in the office, last one to leave. Never had anything given to him. That's why Coach Sampson respects him so much. Warren Sampson, who also is on staff, Bobby. I mean, you know, something to the program every day. I think that's part of the reason that Houston's so good, is they have a great staff and everyone, you know, contributes something different and something valuable to help in the program.
Not looking for bulletin board material for other teams, but no. What's the ceiling for the 23-24 Houston Cougars team at the time we're recording this in April, or in March?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always going to be high, because no matter who's on the team, you have Coach Sampson and you have that staff there. But I think, you know, we're going to have – so people understand about this team is, you know, we kind of got crowned as a really good team, but we had a lot of young guys. It's hard to win with. You know, we were playing three freshmen, and obviously Jairus is a lottery pick, but at the same time, he's a freshman. We played three freshmen, then JVA, who was, you know, didn't play a lot as a freshman. So coach kind of always considers him a freshman. So he said, I mean, we played four freshmen. All those guys are getting a year older. Jairus is the only one. Jairus and Marcus and then Reggie are the only three guys right now that played minutes that are going to be gone. So I think we got a really high ceiling. Jamal, who's our engine, our leader, he'll be back. You know, he averaged 11-5, doesn't turn it over. Pitbull on defense. You know, so we got some really talented guys coming back. Obviously, we're going to have a big step up in competition. You know, we're going to arguably the best league in the country. So that's going to, you know, we might not win 33 games. But I think we'll have a pretty good season, because coach is at the helm and we have a really good staff, and we got guys that are getting a year older and coming back that know the system, know the program. You know, we don't have to teach it to them for 4 months. They know everything going in. So I think that's going to be the most helpful thing, is we're going to have a lot of guys that played minutes this year coming back.
What are your coaching aspirations, and what would you like to be doing 5 years from now?
I mean, I think again, if I was able to work in the NBA, I think you can learn a lot from that game. You know, I think it's always kind of 5 years in advance of college. You know, you see teams doing a lot of five out Zoom, you know, five out concepts now, which the NBA has been doing for 5 years. So I think I'd enjoy being at that level and, you know, seeing that challenge on a day-to-day basis. If I'm ever able to get there, you know, a lot of people say they want to do it. A lot of people aren't ever able to get that. So who knows? But I mean, from 5 years from now, hope to stick around at Houston for, you know, as long as possible, especially for next year. And then, you know, from that point on, I think it just, again, I mean, I prefer hopefully to be at the NBA level in 5 years, but at the same time, you know, if I'm at Houston or if I'm at another, you know, Division I program or any level program, like if I'm around the game of basketball, I'll be happy. But, you know, if I was able to work in the NBA, that would be a dream of mine. Always kind of has been. So that would be hopefully the eventual goal. But at the same time, I love being at Houston. I love the staff. If you can't tell, you know, I love the guys. I love the culture. So I'm trying to stick around here as long as they'll have me.
Coach, we've come to the segment I call Start, Bench, Cut. Give you three things. Start one, bench one, and cut one. Nike, Adidas, Under Armour.
Start Nike, bench Adidas, cut Under Armour.
Powerade, Gatorade, Body Armor.
Start Gatorade, bench Powerade, cut Body Armor.
And no hesitation, I love it. Movies, He Got Game, White Man Can't Jump, Hustle.
Start White Man Can't Jump, bench Hustle, and cut He Got Game. I've never seen He Got Game. I don't know that one. Maybe I need something to do tonight. Maybe I'll watch that.
Can't go wrong watching that. Music, Drake, Eminem, Jay-Z.
Start Jay-Z, bench Eminem, cut Drake.
Last one, Hoop Dirt, Verbal Commits, Transfer Portal.
That's a good one. Start Hoop Dirt, because I look at that one all the time. That's where I get all my coaching info. Bench Verbal Commits, and then cut Transfer Portal.
Fair enough. Who are three guests I should have on the podcast?
Mike Mannix. I like him. He's a good one. Kellen Sampson. He's the man. BJ Mackey at Wake. He's the man right there.
Okay, I've heard good stuff. What advice would you give to someone looking to become a graduate assistant or pursue a career in basketball?
Yeah. I mean, I think I came from, you know, playing at Wake, and still it was tough for me to get a job in the basketball world. So I think, you know, it's really difficult to get one. There's a lot more people that want jobs than there are jobs available. So I would say that, you know, the biggest thing is working in basketball, no matter what it is, like finding some way to stay involved in the game, even if you're not at the job that you want to be at yet. I think another thing is just developing relationships. You never know when that will pay off for you, and you never know. I mean, people always say like that, like pay off for you in terms of they're going to help you out. But one, like developing relationships is just good for your mental health, but you never know when you'll be able to help someone out. Like, I think that's just a key aspect, especially, I mean, just overall in the job search. And then, you know, luck and timing is a lot of it. You know, reaching out at the right time, or a job opens up at a time that, you know, you may be looking, like there's a lot of luck and timing involved. So I would say, you know, knowing that, like a lot of us are lucky to be in positions that we're in. So don't give up just because you're not in one of those yet. You know, keep working in basketball. Like for me this summer, when I wasn't doing that, I was training kids. I went to Vegas. And then the other thing is I was learning sports code. And then when I learned it, I started posting a bunch of clips on Twitter. And I actually had some people reach out based on seeing those clips. So like whether, you know, it's if you want to be in a front office situation or a scouting thing, like watching college guys and creating some stuff on them and putting it on Twitter or sending it to someone. If you want to be coaching, you know, watching X's and O's stuff and posting that on Twitter, like that was something that I did. So just staying in basketball and, you know, building relationships and reaching out to people, I think that stuff's always helpful. And then you got to work, once you get a job, you got to work really hard, or else you're going to be out of a job quickly.
That's great advice, Coach. If listeners want to get in touch with you, email, social media, what have you, what's the best way?
I'd say I respond the most on Twitter, at Miles Lester 23. I also respond to email. I check my email all the time. So mlester2306@gmail.com. Either of those, I'm normally checking a lot during the day, so I normally respond.
Coach, can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on. This is great.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond the Box Score podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, leave reviews, and rate 5 stars.